Hello, everyone. My name is Kelly from the Talking Information Center. Today is Friday, the 10th of April, and I will be reading from the Plymouth Independent. The first article today is titled, Town Meeting to Decide Contentious Issues, and it was written by Fred Thies of the Independent staff on April 9th. And the subtitle is, A Fiscal Cliff Means Spending is a Hot Topic, but ICE Policy Sparks Controversy. Saturday's town meeting will focus on fiscal restraint, local immigration policy, and the timing of the twice-yearly gathering of 162 residents who will decide each issue. The session is set to begin at 8 a.m. Saturday at Plymouth North High School. On the table are decisions to spend up to $100,000 on July 4th and Thanksgiving celebrations, reducing health benefits for future town employees to save money, and a plan to spruce up Town Square. But among the most heated of topics is the codification of a police policy designed to prevent cooperation with agents of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, who sometimes come to town looking to arrest undocumented immigrants. There is also a proposal to move the dates for spring town meetings starting next year to May and the town election from May to June. Town meeting is Plymouth's legislature with 162 elected members. It is overseen by longtime town moderator Steve Trifletti, who only votes in the event of a tie. Each of Plymouth's 18 voting precincts elects 9 members to 3-year terms. Those terms are staggered so that 3 members from each precinct are elected in May's annual town election. The public can attend town meeting in person. It will also be streamed live by the local scene. Anyone can speak, including non-residents, but they must wait until after town meeting members have spoken on a particular agenda item. If all businesses is not conducted on April 11th because of time constraints, the meeting will be extended to the evening of April 13th. Spring town meeting is really 2 town meetings in one. The annual spring town meeting is prescribed by the town charter and must be held the first Saturday in April. But the select board is also convening a special town meeting to deal with issues arising after the deadline for the annual town meeting. The 2 warrants contain a total of 47 articles, which are the items approved by the select board for discussion and votes. Here are the summaries of some of the most significant articles. The first is special spring town meeting, articles 3 through 4. Free cash subsidies for fireworks and parades. After much debate, the select board ultimately recommended awarding $100,000 for fireworks and parades, but some suggest the money is better spent elsewhere. The money would come from an account called free cash. The next is special spring town meeting articles 5 through 8, moving the dates for town meeting and the town election. The select board is recommending the spring annual town meeting starting next year be moved from the first Saturday in April to the third Saturday in May, and the annual town election be moved from the third Saturday in May to the second Saturday in June. Select board member Kevin Canty proposed the changes. They were unanimously approved by the board. At the March 17th and 24th meetings of the select board, Canty argued the changes are necessary so town meeting can have better information about how much money will be coming in from the state. The State House and Senate Ways and Means Committees typically form their budgets in May. The legislator closely follows those recommendations when it comes to state aid to cities and towns. Canty argued moving the election to June would ensure everyone at the May town meeting would have time to go over the budget figures. The next is the Special Spring Town Meeting Article 10, Reform of Retirement Benefits for New Employees. Some Plymouth employees pay as little as 10% of their health insurance premiums when they retire. In December, Select Board Member Deb Iaquinto proposed the town re-examine the arrangement. By a 2-2 vote, the board decided not to propose town meeting consider the change, but a citizen's petition was successful in putting it on the agenda anyway. Health benefits for retirees are among Plymouth's costliest expenses at a time when the town faces a budget crunch. Town employees currently pay for 30% of their health insurance premiums, but upon retirement, they are allowed to contribute at the rate they paid when they were first hired. That means many retirees go back to paying just 10% of their premiums, a rate considered minimal with rising health insurance costs straining town finances. To my knowledge, Plymouth is the only municipality that has a provision like this, Iaquinto said in December. It's a very generous benefit for sure, and it has a significant and ongoing impact on our healthcare costs. Iaquinto proposed an article for the spring town meeting to discontinue this benefit for new employees. Plymouth's costs for retirement benefits, excluding pensions, are the fourth highest in the state after Boston, Worcester, and Springfield. Current employees and retirees would not be affected. This particular promise is costing us quite a lot, said Select Board member Kevin Canty in December. It's important to take this up sooner rather than later. But Canty was the only board member to support Iaquinto's proposal. Board member Bill Cohen said he wanted more feedback before sending the measure to town meeting. And Select Board Chair David Golden and Vice Chair Dick Quintal said the proposal would antagonize employee union leaders by circumventing the collective bargaining process. It's wildly inappropriate for us to even have this conversation without having first engaged our partners who are leaders of the unions, Golden said in December. So, town meeting member Richard Cerkey gathered enough signatures for a citizen's petition to put the proposal before town meeting despite the opposition of the select board. The next is annual town meeting Article 18, Item A30, Town Square. The Department of Energy and Environment is seeking $117,250 to plan and design Phase 2 of the Downtown Resiliency Project, which includes a remaking of Town Square into a much more pedestrian-friendly and environmentally friendly area. The proposed improvements include 9 new trees, cobblestone pavement, and native landscaping. In one sense, the project will restore the square to some of its original features, with shade trees and permeable pavement that allows the rainwater to seep into the ground before flowing out into the harbor. Phase 2 of the Downtown Resiliency Project also includes Courthouse Green and the Main Street Extension parking lot. The design and permitting phase of the project is projected to cost $175,650. Town meeting approved $60,400 in 2019 from community preservation funds. The town is seeking another $117,250 from this upcoming town meeting. Construction of Phase 2 would not begin until Phase 1, which covers Main and Court Streets from Samoset Street to Shirley Square, is fully funded. The town was turned down by the state for a $3 million grant last year and has reapplied for that grant. The town should hear from the state by May whether it has received the funding. If the grant comes through, the town will ask the fall town meeting for another $2 million. Construction would begin in November and would be completed in the spring of 2028. At that point, the town would apply for funding for construction of Phase 2. If the funding comes through, the town would then go once again to town meeting for more funding. Construction would begin in the fall of 2028 and would be completed in the spring of 2030. The next is annual town meeting Article 37, ICE. Town meeting will consider a citizen's petition to enact a bylaw restricting the town's cooperation with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. By a close 3-2 vote, the Select Board endorsed the citizen's petition. Select Board Chair David Golden and Vice Chair Dick Quintal voted against the recommendation. The Select Board has already adopted the Police Department's policy restricting cooperation with ICE, but the petitioners argue the current police policy does not go far enough to ensure ICE will get no help from Plymouth. They also argue adopting a bylaw will make it harder to change the anti-ICE policy. The current police department policy adopted by the Select Board does not allow police to be involved in immigration enforcement. Police Chief Dana Flynn has said officers do not typically inquire about immigration status and are not allowed to assist federal authorities on immigration-related investigations. The police department is governed by a 2017 decision from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, Commonwealth v. Lund, which prohibits local police from arresting or holding anyone based solely on their immigration status, even if the person is the subject of a federal immigration detainer. A request from ICE to hold a person for immigration proceedings. Select Board Chair David Golden and member Dick Quintal voted against recommending town meeting pass the bylaw. Golden said the current arrangement provides oversight from the Select Board, but also allows the police flexibility to adapt to changing circumstances. "We want to keep this in the hands of the police," Golden said. Select Board member Kevin Canty argued town meeting has a role to play. there is a benefit to having a bylaw and a policy that, right now, line up, Canty said in February. Town meeting is the best place to have a further discussion about the merits of this approach. The next article is titled, Zoning Board Poised to Approve Pult Project. After months of contentious debate, the condo project is set for Monday vote. It is written by Andrea Estes of the Independent Staff on April 8th. For months, neighbors have been begging the town zoning board to deny Pult Homes permits to build three condo buildings in North Plymouth. The project was too large, they argued, too dense and out of place in the quiet North Plymouth neighborhood. They cited the arsenic and other toxic substances found in the soil and water in the proposed Sandry Drive building's proximity to a federally monitored Superfund site. Residents held out hope the board would reject Pulte's request to build 163 condos on nearly 3 acres between Prince Street and Sandry Drive. It became clear at the board's Monday night meeting, however, their efforts to stop the 40B affordable housing development will likely fail. The panel didn't take a final vote, but their discussion centered around placing conditions on the permit. At least 85 conditions, none of which appeared so onerous that Pulte would back out. A final vote is scheduled for April 13th. Residents reacted strongly to board members' apparent willingness to approve the project over their vehement objections. I'm not sure I can fit my fury into an email, wrote Carol Jankowski, a Prince Street resident who has repeatedly implored the board to reject the project, which she believes could destroy the neighborhood. The ZBA hardly deliberated, she wrote. I actually thought that all of the information that opponents submitted would be carefully considered and that a robust discussion would take place. ZBA Chair Michael Main acknowledged the neighbors' strong feelings, but insisted their reaction has been no different than that of neighbors opposing other affordable housing projects in town. The board has insisted the state's 40B law, designed to encourage affordable housing construction, largely restricts local authority to stop it. As far as this project in particular, in the 21 years I've been here, and there are other board members who have been here longer, will tell you, this isn't the worst one we ever had, he said. There have been others that have been a lot more difficult. I understand completely the neighborhood and the concerns, because every single 40B we've gone through has been the exact same, he said. He has repeatedly said under the 40B law, developers can bypass most local rules. A decision to reject a 40B permit request would likely be reversed on appeal, he has said. Though there were no decision of actually denying the permit, two members, Ed Conroy and David Peck, argued for strict environmental requirements. Peck asked that permanent monitoring wells be required on the Sandry Drive site to make sure no contamination migrates from the adjacent Plymouth Harbor Cannon Engineering Corp. Environmental Protection Agency Superfund site, where officials found lead, fuel oil, and other hazardous substances leaking from above-ground storage tanks in 1980. But his board colleagues seemed confident that if pollutants were going to seep from the Superfund site, it would have happened already. The site was removed from EPA's priorities list in 1993, but is still subject to 5-year reviews and a deed restriction prohibiting the construction of housing on the land. You're making a big guess, said Ed Conroy. People's lives are at stake. Carolyn Murray, the board's lawyer, said environmental issues are under the purview of the State Department of Environmental Protection and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The town has no say, she said. Just the same, the board agreed to require Pulte to submit proof pollutants have been removed before building or earth removal permits are issued. Mark Adams, an opponent who has studied environmental reports prepared by a consultant hired by the landowner, 8 Mates LLC, said the board should reconsider the consultant's conclusion that arsenic-laced coal ash is still present on the sites, primarily on Sandry Drive. Because the arsenic has been deemed historic, he pointed out, it didn't have to be reported to the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. Once site work starts for water, sewer, utility lines, and perhaps pilings, then what about the workers on site and people and children walking the hiking trail? Asked Adams. They'll all be exposed to arsenic dust during excavation. I guess it's health and safety be damned. Placing conditions on the permit approval is not enough to keep people safe. At Monday's meeting, the board agreed to waive dozens of local laws and regulations, Among them, sewer and water hookup fees for the 25% of the units to be considered affordable, according to state income guidelines. Among the more than 70 waivers the board approved are 9-foot parking spaces in the underground garage, although board members, especially Maine, have generally demanded 10-foot wide spaces. The company will also be allowed to build a 66-foot tall building on Sandry Drive, despite a town-wide height limit of 35 feet. It will also be exempt from the town regulation that only one building be erected on a single lot. Pulte plans to construct 2 buildings on the Prince Street lot. But Maine, who acknowledged nobody on the board liked the project, did suggest there may be a silver lining. "There's some good news and bad news," he said. "The town is close to hitting a milestone that would allow it to reject future 40B requests," he said. "When 10% of the town's housing stock is affordable, the town can deny 40B permits." Plymouth's housing is now 8.42% affordable, according to state data. The next article is titled, "With Finances Slim, Town Meeting to Decide Whether to Spend More on Parades, Fireworks." It is written by Mark Pothier. And the subheadline is, "Yes Votes Would Boost July 4th Thanksgiving Events by $50,000 each." You know the old saying, everyone loves a parade. I suppose the same goes for 4th of July fireworks displays, although Plymouth's dogs may beg to differ. Then why are so few people willing to come up with a few dollars to support these annual festivities? And why should the town have to dip into its so-called free cash bucket to subsidize the events, as well as a nonprofit behind the Thanksgiving parade, by $100,000 more than last year? Especially at a time when the budget is tight and money might be better spent on things like a second sidewalk plow, road repairs, or a $3 million snow removal bill that will only be partially reimbursed. These questions and more come to mind as 2 warrant items are set for consideration during the special town meeting portion of Saturday's town meeting at Plymouth North High School. The answers, as you might figure, are complicated. Article 3 calls for the town to allocate $50,000 in 250th anniversary funding for July 4th Plymouth Inc., the nonprofit overseeing the parade and fireworks. Article 4 would appropriate another $50,000 in 250th anniversary funding for America's Hometown Thanksgiving Celebration, another nonprofit. The 250th anniversary is, of course, a reference to the country's birthday, more affectionately known as the semi-quincentennial. The birthing took place in Philadelphia, not Plymouth, a key point some officials seem to have overlooked in their advocacy for additional spending. But who can fault America's hometown for wanting in on the party? Matt Tavares, a town meeting member, is the seemingly tireless champion behind the July 4th events. He took over responsibility for organizing them from his father, Ken Tavares, a well-known former select board member who did it for decades. The position comes with long hours and lousy pay, $0, but civic engagement runs in the family. In recent weeks, the younger Tavares has gone before the select board and finance and advisory committee to detail July 4th Plymouth's dire financial condition. He told me the 5-person volunteer group needs at least $175,000 to pull off this year's events. Here's the discouraging part. As much as people claim they cherish the parade and fireworks, in 2025, just 52 individuals donated a total of about $1,500 in a town whose population is climbing towards 70,000. This year, there have been 10 donations so far. The biggest pile of money, $60,000, will come from the Visitor Services Board, using dollars collected from the town's hotel rooms tax. It's a $20,000 bump. The Plymouth Growth and Development Corporation contributes $10,000, while food truck and vendor fees, along with pledges yet to be collected, are expected to add $10,500. Throw in about $2,100 in parade entrant fees, and it accounts for $84,100, Tavares figures. The town doles out another $15,000 apiece to the July 4th and Thanksgiving groups, according to Select Board member Kevin Canty, which would leave the 4th organizers in need of approximately $85,900. Based upon the recent history over the last 6 years, that is not achievable, Tavares said. Without the support of town meeting and increased backing from the citizen community, the July 4th committee will have no choice but to cut either the parade or the fireworks. He's not bluffing. Even with the $50,000 from Article 3, both articles were proposed by Select Board member Dick Quintal, the parade and fireworks would still face a significant deficit. By far, the biggest difference between this year and last, when the July 4th group had to drain down its emergency CD bank account to make ends meet, is a $20,000 increase in public safety costs. That line item alone is estimated at a $109,500, nearly twice the price of the fireworks display itself. The July and November celebrations are something for our residents and the kids and the families, Quintal said, in explaining his reasoning at the March 24th Select Board meeting. More than that, it's the 250th anniversary. If it wasn't, I wouldn't even be requesting this. I've got to be honest with you. I think it's time the town stepped up to do the plate moving forward in support of these projects a little more than what they do. The board ultimately voted to recommend town meeting appropriate the money. Deb Iaquinto voiced concerns about the wisdom of the added funding, but did not vote to let town meeting wrestle with it in the context of the full town budget. Only Canty dissented outright. In the current economic climate that we are in, he said last month, I am not in a position where I can support spending more on fireworks and parades. In a phone conversation last week, Canty elaborated on his position. Spending more money on a parade or on fireworks is less responsible than spending it on your existing snow and ice bill or on the various other known financial liabilities that the town currently has, he said. Like the Select Board, the FinCom also recommended Articles 3 and 4 to town meeting. Where are the deep-pocketed residents who could together foot the bill this year? Where are the regular folks who can afford to spend hundreds of dollars at Market Basket to stock a July 4th backyard party but not write a $50 check to the July 4th group? How about one less lobster roll in favor of a donation? It would only take a little bit from not that many people to solve this problem. And then there's the overarching issue Canty rightly raised. Why should the town spend more on one-day events when long-term budget problems are at the doorstep? Where will Plymouth stand on the nation's 251st birthday in 2027? Tavares says he's wrestling with the funding issue from both sides. As the director of July 4th Plymouth and as a town meeting member representing taxpaying constituents, he also recognizes it's been a tough couple of years for many local businesses. Plymouth has so many organizations and they're all just like us, looking to these businesses for help and for support, Tavares said. I get it. If I was a small business owner, I'd be like, man, it's every week I turn around and somebody wants money from me. At the same time, he said, businesses benefit from the parade and firework crowds, though not on an equal basis. No one, however, was able to put a dollar figure on those benefits, even though Quintal, Select Board member Bill Cohen, and various FinCom members made generalized statements about the positive economic impact of the parades and fireworks in expressing support for Articles 3 and 4. In other words, we don't know what the ROI is on spending an extra $100,000 this year, beyond obvious metrics like sold-out hotels and motels. I suspect a private company facing a fiscal crunch would demand more than anecdotal evidence before increasing a budget. But time is ticking by. Tavares has pinpointed June 15th as D-Day. If his group doesn't have $140,000 to $150,000 committed by then, he said, I'm going to be very worried in having to make a decision on which shoe drops, whether it's the parade or the fireworks. I wasn't a petitioner of the article to increase funding, obviously, he added, but I'm going to go out and support it as long as I can until the vote is taken. He won't have to wait much longer. I also spoke with Ollie DeMacedo, director of the much larger weekend spectacle that is America's Hometown Thanksgiving Celebration, which is seen nationally through a partnership with WCVB-TV. He's fueled by the same level of zeal Tavares runs on and takes care to loud the many, loud the merry volunteers helping make the events happen. The November parade will go on with or without the $50,000 called for in Article 4, but he would certainly welcome it. Since COVID, the cost of almost everything has doubled, DeMacedo said, from security to the pretty significant floats we build. It's $400,000 to $500,000 a year to put this on. And on top of that, we pay for all police, fire, ambulance, everything. We pay all the town services. I would say it's well over $60,000. He said America's hometown Thanksgiving celebration receives about $100,000 from various town sources, but a lot of it goes back to the town because we pay for all the services. Unlike the July parade, which has a purposely homemade feel, the November one, held on the Saturday before Thanksgiving, boasts a professional sheen and is partially tailored to TV and streaming audiences. That's why it dropped some serious dough on bringing in groups such as the 380-member UMass Marching Band to the tune of $39,000. That's travel, housing, and everything. It's transportation, feeding them, the whole deal, Damasita said. That's just one single group, and we have so many groups in every, we pay them to come from all different parts of the country. He's grateful for the possibility of $50,000 in extra support, but says he did not seek it out. We want to bring people from Virginia, South Carolina. We want to really bring the nation into what we do. But all that takes money, Damasita said, adding the one-time funding boost is going to help us this year. But I think the best thing would be for the town to just basically take over public safety. He also acknowledged beefing up public funding for a nonprofit's parade might not be a top priority this year. There might be others. I understand that, Damasita said. But at some point, we also need to think of the cultural impact. You know, a cultural thing that brings economic impact. But we love doing it. We're not going to go anywhere. The last section risks lulling you to sleep, but it matters a lot. The funding for both articles would be pulled from the misleadingly named free cash account. Thanks, state bureaucrats. Town Finance Director Lynn Barrett, God bless her, spent a considerable amount of time patiently explaining the concept to this English major. My big takeaway, there's nothing free about it. Basically, free cash is money budgeted but not spent, such as for department positions left unfulfilled, equipment not purchased, or services not used. It also comes from income that exceeded estimates, like added excise tax revenue from those overpriced big trucks roaring all over town. Because the amount varies from year to year, the money is not recommended for funding permanent jobs or any kind of recurring cost. It doesn't all have to be spent, and about 10% is rolled over into the next fiscal year as a cushion. For this town meeting, Barrett said there's almost $22.8 million in free cash on hand, after some spending at the fall meeting. We are recommending to set aside $9,609,403 in various reserves and spend $11,681,894 on capital and other one-time purchases, leaving $1,499,837 balance remaining, she said in an email. Whether that includes bigger bangs for more bucks on the 4th of July, we will be up to the discretion of your elected precinct representatives at the annual and special town meetings. There's still time to let them know where you stand. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. I'm Kelly, and I thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center in the Plymouth Independent. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.